We'll hear argument now on number 86-1824, Michigan against Michael Chesternut. Ms. Solak, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. On December 19, 1984, at approximately 12:30 p.m., four plainclothes officers were on a routine patrol in the city of Detroit in a standard police car, black in color, with markings at the side door. At a preliminary examination, one officer testified that he observed a car pull to the curb and a man alight from the car and address the respondent standing on the corner. The police car continued its westward path, approaching the corner, at which time the respondent looked in the direction of the police car, turned, and began to run down the street.
This is in the city of Detroit?
It is, Your Honor. Was, Your Honor, yes. The police car pulled around the corner and drove parallel to the running man. There were no lights, sirens, or verbal communications directed to the respondent. During this time, the respondent tossed a number of packets from his right-hand pocket, proceeded about 5 feet further, and stopped. The officer then got out of his car and retrieved the packets and found pills. Based on his experience, he believed them to contain suspected narcotics.
On the ground?
They had been tossed to the sidewalk, yes, Your Honor.
The respondent was seen to toss them, did you say?
Yes. He was observed to have tossed them from his right-hand pocket. The officer then arrested the respondent for possession of narcotics. The prosecutor, at a motion to bind over for trial, argued that there was nothing illegal in pursuing a citizen down the street. The examining magistrate rejoined, "You want a bet? We're here today to settle that bet." In 1968, in Terry v. Ohio, this court faced the question of whether an actual physical restraint of a person for purposes other than a probable cause-based arrest implicates the Fourth Amendment, and if so, when, if ever, is that seizure reasonable? This court, of course, concluded that such seizures do come within the Fourth Amendment and are reasonable when justified by articulable facts demonstrating a reasonable suspicion to believe the criminal activity is afoot. This court observed in Terry that prior to the point of the actual physical restraint, it need only to have assumed there was no intrusion upon constitutionally protected rights.
Ms. Solak, is it your position then that a police chase never implicates the Fourth Amendment until the person being chased is actually stopped or seized?
That is my position, and that seizure, of course, could take place by actual physical restraint by the officer.
I mean, even if the red lights were flashing and the siren was blazing and the guns were drawn?
That is correct. Even if there were perhaps that show of authority, unless and until the capture, if you will, takes place, there is no seizure.
If you were riding in a car, would you and the policeman came up behind you and turned on his red lights and his siren? You usually pull over then.
Most citizens do usually acquiesce, and under my standard, if the citizen did pull over and it was in response to an official show of authority,
well,
that would be a seizure.
How about an official show of authority like red lights and a siren?
And if the citizen were to have acquiesced to those red lights and a siren, I believe a seizure would have taken place. If the citizen did not acquiesce and engaged in a pursuit, would be our position that is not, in fact, a seizure under the Fourth Amendment.
Well, this citizen, in this case, he understood that the police were chasing him. She understood the police were chasing her, I guess. She stopped. She stopped anyway, didn't she?
He did ultimately stop.
Is that a he or a she?
It was a he, Michael. Right. Yes, he did ultimately stop.
Right. He knew he was about to be seized, didn't he?
He knew he had, the court believed that he had reason to anticipate a capture, but he did not.
He knew he was about to be seized. So this was seconds or so before the seizure.
This was seconds before the seizure, exactly, Your Honor. In cases such as United States versus Mendoza.
Counsel, do you take the position that he knew he was about to be seized? Do you concede that?
No, I do not. Thank you for bringing that point to the fore.
If you don't, why did he throw the dope away?
The defendant's conduct in abandoning may not have been an intelligent decision, But I would argue that...
Do you have any other reason to throw it away?
Other than the presence of the police?
Yes.
No, he did not. In response to Justice Kennedy's point, we do not concede that the instant case was, in fact, an attempted seizure. Rather, what we would suggest is that there was absolutely no entree or attempted communication by the police officer other than his mere presence on the scene. And in the absence of a show of authority or an exercise of force, it is improper and factually illogical to assume that the defendant would, in fact, have been seized.
Well, Ms. Solak, what if the police had a chance to speak to the person and say, stop, we want to talk to you, and he then takes off and they pursue?
This Court has recognized that police-citizen encounters of the sort that you might have described are appropriate on some occasion. An officer may make an entree of a citizen.
Can that be a seizure under the Fourth Amendment?
I don't believe under Mendenhall versus Royer that merely the entree by an officer, I would like to speak to you, would constitute a seizure.
He says stop.
Saying stop and asserting perhaps police presence would certainly add a factor into an assessment of a show of authority.
Is a show of authority enough to implicate the Fourth Amendment then?
No, I do not believe that it is enough to implicate the Fourth Amendment. There must also be the response in response to the show of authority. Basically, the test that is proffered before this Court by the petitioner has a cause and effect analysis. If the police undertake, by a show of authority or exercise of force, to cause the restraint of the petitioner, and they effect that restraint, then there will be a seizure under the Fourth Amendment. So you therefore have the show of authority and either the actual capture or the acquiescence which is reasonably responsive to that show of authority. In a survey of the cases that have been handled by this Court, most of the cases involve, in fact, all of the cases involve either an actual physical restraint or a citizen's acquiescence to a show of authority. This Court has never held nor intimated that a citizen who, in fact, goes on his way has been seized. In a related area, at least two circuits, the Sixth and the Ninth, have refused to find a Fourth Amendment violation so as to support a 42 U.S.C. 1983 cause of actions in instances where a plaintiff ran or drove away from a police officer clearly attempting to achieve a seizure. The pursuit which ensued in those cases was not held to be a restraint on the liberty by official show of authority so as to constitute a seizure under the Fourth Amendment.
There was a seizure here, wasn't there?
In this case?
Mm-hmm.
In this case, there was ultimately a probable cause
for
the seizure.
No, there was a seizure of the effects.
The petitioner would not concede that, in fact, there was a seizure. Just as we suggest
the officer picked up the packets. They seized the packets that were thrown away.
The officer did pick up
what
the
justified that?
Retreat. Pardon me?
What justified that?
There was an abandonment of the packets. The respondent, in fact, relinquished any expectations of privacy that he may well have had. Just as we submit that a seizure is a seizure when it occurs, we believe the Court of Appeals erred in finding that the abandonment was in anticipation of a potentially unlawful search.
What was held was that the abandonment was the fruit of an unlawful seizure, I guess. That's what it was.
I believe the Court of Appeals held, the Michigan Court of Appeals held, that the abandonment was the fruit of an unlawful seizure of the person by virtue of the pursuit. They did not differentiate between a search of the person, from which the evidence may have been derived, and a seizure of the citizen. Given the myriad of police-citizen encounters that this Court has recognized, it is simply illogical to assume that an encounter by the police and the citizen will necessarily result in an illegal detention or a seizure, and further an illegal search.
But it was, the decision was based on the Shabazz case, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Which is not a federal case.
No, it is indeed a Michigan case. By way of information, Shabazz had cert granted by this court, and the respondent in that case met an untimely death, and the case was dismissed as being moot. The Ninth Circuit, in holding that a pursuit is not a seizure, stated that flight is an act of autonomy whose purpose is to avoid restraint. And I believe these two circuits teach that a seizure is a seizure, and an attempted seizure is not an attempt, is not a seizure. The Court of Appeals for the D.C., for the District of Columbia, did recently conclude that a person is seized when a pursuit begins. The court concluded that the person pursued assumes that the object of the chase is a capture. Thus, when the chase commences, the stop begins. This rationale tracks the rationale employed by the Michigan courts. However, I believe it runs afoul of the teachings of INS versus Delgado. In Delgado, there was a factory survey wherein immigration officers were clearly identifiable, armed, and stationed at the doors of the private factory. This court stated that though a person may have been questioned if they had attempted to leave, this did not create a reasonable apprehension of a detention. And further, that if the person may have been detained if they attempted to leave, in fact, in that case, the people did not attempt to leave. The seizure question was simply thus not litigable on that ground, as it had not occurred. This court stated that one may only litigate that which actually occurred to him. Similarly, in the instant case, the fact that the respondent may have been questioned had he chosen to remain does not create a reasonable apprehension of a forcible detention, nor the possibility that had he attempted to leave, he would have been detained means that he was detained. In fact, he was free to go about his way, and he did so. He was not detained by the police. There is nothing on the record to support an objective finding that a detention was contemplated or attempted. Again, there was no sirens, verbal commands, or lights that were employed by the police. The trial court admitted that he didn't know what would have happened, and the police officer stated he simply pursued the respondent to see where he was going. Therefore, it was the defendant, the respondent's flight from the mere presence of the police officer which prevented any kind of encounter, consensual or otherwise, from occurring. It is also important to note that the police officers did not immediately approach the respondent. They did not leave their cars until such time as the narcotics were thrown to the sidewalk, and then only after having inspected the pills and finding them to contain narcotics did they then approach the respondent.
To say that there was reason enough to, or there seizure of the packets was legal, wholly aside from any seizure of the person.
I do indeed say that, Your Honor, that the seizure was legal.
Because they were abandoned, or because he had given up any privacy?
He had given up any privacy rights as well, yes.
And the officers could not only seize them, but open them?
He inspected the pills, and found them to be suspected narcotics.
But he had to open the packets to see the pills?
He did open the packets, yes. Assuming our...
I really don't understand what happened here. He dropped the packets and then stopped 5 feet away from them?
Yes, he ran approximately 5 feet further and simply stopped.
That's very strange. Is there any explanation for why I think...
There is no explanation. The record is scant. It was a preliminary examination. The case never did go to trial. Assuming argument.
Does the record show that one police officer was detaining him?
No. In fact, I believe the record indicates that the officer who testified was the only one who had gotten out of the car, inspected the packets, and then arrested the defendant.
And the defendant just stands there while all this is happening?
That's correct. That's the reflection of the record. Assuming argument.
Supposed to stay there, or he wouldn't have, but he just was mistaken, I guess. You say
he was mistaken, and perhaps his conduct in retrospect, was not wise. It was not, however, in response to a show of authority by the police. Assuming arguendo that the pursuit of the respondent was a seizure and that his abandonment was a search, the petitioner submits that the minimal intrusion upon the individual may be justified by circumstances which would lead a reasonable person to believe that criminal activity was afoot. The reaction of the police in this case to the unprecipitated flight by the respondent is exactly the type of swift, on-the-spot reaction that this Court has anticipated in Terry and which is necessary to maintain the status quo. The cause of the flight in this case was not wholly ambiguous. Rather, it was in direct response to the presence of identifiable police, the police. The alternative of the police in this case, which respondent proposes, is that the police should simply shrug their shoulders and allow either a crime to occur or a criminal to escape. Such conduct in and of itself would be a dereliction of duty and unreasonable by the police officer. Respondent submits that the flight from an identifiable police officer provides reasonable suspicion to believe that criminal activity is afoot and justifies the minimal intrusion and brief temporary detention.
If he had not dropped the packets on the sidewalk, would the police have detained him at all?
In this case, of course, the act of dropping the side, the
packets. But I say if that had not happened.
Under our position, the police could have engaged in some kind of consensual encounter. We have no way of knowing exactly what they did do. They could well have engaged in a consensual encounter, simply asking the individual, why are you running, where are you going, is something amiss?
You think it could have? Just running away justified a Terry stop, a forceful Terry stop?
I do believe that running from the site of the police
officer. That issue isn't here, right?
No, actually, that issue is not factually presented because, in fact, the respondent ran from an encounter on the corner with another individual, and that flight was precipitated then by the observation of the police.
You make that argument, don't you? That's your second argument, that there was sufficient reasonable suspicion to justify a Terry stop.
That is our second argument,
yes. So you would also argue they could have pulled him over and stopped him and frisked him.
Yes, that is my argument. Yeah. Well, I did not make the argument relative to the frisk. If, in fact, facts developed that would have led the officer to believe that the respondent was armed, he may then have gone forth with a frisk. But certainly he could have pulled him over as to a brief temporary
I thought a Terry stop gave you authority to make a frisk.
For weapons.
You don't take that position.
I do not take the position that in and of itself he would have been subject to a frisk. No, I don't.
But he would have been just subject to questioning.
Yeah.
At best, brief questioning.
What if he'd said, I'm sorry, I'd rather not talk to you?
At that point in time, it's fish or cut bait. The officer would have had the opportunity to investigate the nature of the suspicious conduct, the flight. If he had looked about him and seen nothing discarded in the flight path of the individual and no other reason to believe that criminal activity had gone forth, he would then have to release the defendant, the respondent. No, what he would have then found is that there was no further reason for the detention. The flight, in fact, justified the brief investigative detention, but prolonged or further detention at that point would no longer be justified, and he would have to release the individual. In sum, the petitioner submits that the respondent in this case was neither seized nor searched under the Fourth Amendment and cannot litigate the reasonableness of that which did not occur. Moreover, if the pursuit and the abandonment of the narcotics are viewed as a seizure and a search, that seizure should be viewed as justified by a reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Solak. We'll hear now from you, Ms. Stanier.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, This case concerns the parameters of Fourth Amendment protection where an individual's invocation of the right to go on his way is met by a police chase by four officers in a marked police cruiser. My argument will be divided into three parts. First of all, we contend that this chase would have led a reasonable person to believe that he was not free to leave. That's the seizure question. Secondly, that this intrusion was not justified by a reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. And thirdly, that this was an unreasonable seizure in terms of its method and scope. Briefly, as to the facts relevant to the show of authority seizure question, these officers were driving in a black marked Detroit police cruiser. It had markings on the side door. And according to the officer, quote, "everybody knows what it is," unquote. Counsel has suggested that all four officers were in plain clothes. I believe the record only indicates the dress of the officer who testified, and he was in plain clothes. In terms of whether or not the officers activated their lights or sirens, the officer was never asked whether or not he activated his sirens, nor was he asked whether or not his vehicle had that type of equipment. When Mr. Chesternut ran from the corner, these officers pursued him around the corner, chased him down the street.
Ms. Stanier, you used the word pursued. Is that any different than followed?
Well, Your Honor, is pursued any different than following?
Yes, are you using it in any different sense than followed? The reason I ask is some of our cases, the Knotts case and the Carroll case, say that the police can follow you all day on a public street and there's no Fourth Amendment issue.
Your Honor, I'm using the term pursue as being synonymous with following and as distinct from chasing. What occurred next was the chase. They chased him down the street and they overtook him. And instead of simply continuing on down the block, I think these officers had to slow down the cruiser in order to run it parallel with Mr. Chesternut. And in that position, Mr. Chesternut was alone. He was isolated from assistance. He was pitted between the apartment structure and a police cruiser. In that spot, he could certainly see that there were four police officers here, and this, in fact, was a police cruiser. His next actions occurred almost simultaneously. He dropped the packets, and within 5 feet, one running stride, he stopped. In terms of whether or not the officers all got out or all stayed in the car, the record only reflects what Officer Pelletier did. And after the dropping of the packets and stopping, Officer Pelletier then got out and opened up the packets. We submit that under these circumstances, a reasonable person would feel that he was not free to leave, and that the objective characteristics of this police chase meet the standards that this court has set forth to define a seizure by show of authority. This police chase was a seizure because at the very least, it indicated to Mr. Chesternut that these officers were going to detain him immediately.
At what point did it become a seizure?
At the very latest, Your Honor, respondent contends that this became a seizure after these officers had chased him, had overtaken him, and were running the cruiser parallel with him. Because at that point, you have a conveyance, or the officers convey a message to Mr. Chesternut that, number one, they are going to stop him immediately, that he has done something wrong to warrant being stopped. We contend that this police chase was a seizure because it implicated every basic interest under the Fourth Amendment, his right to be secure in his person, his right to privacy, his right to be left alone by government, and his right to go on his way. This court decided in the United States.
Ms. Steiner, can I ask some more about the circumstances before you get any further? You said that there was nothing in the record that the lights weren't on or that the car didn't have lights. Was there anything that they were?
No.
I mean, we have to take this case on the assumption that there were no sirens going, no lights flashing, because there's no indication that there was.
There's no record reference to it either way.
You say the car had to slow down. I don't know how you can call it a chase if it slows down in order to. That's a queer sort of a chase, if you understand what I mean.
Your Honor, once they caught him, they slowed down. It's our position that in order to. What happened was they had to gain ground on him by accelerating, and in order not to continue on past him, they would have had to slow down. That was my only point.
And they were cruising next to him for some.
The record doesn't indicate how long they would have been cruising next to him, but the officer indicated, the term he used was, they were running parallel with him. Mm-hmm. It doesn't indicate how long.
And again, we don't know that they said anything to him, that they said stop or.
The record doesn't indicate either way.
So we assume for purposes of the case that they didn't.
Correct.
Ms. Stanier, what if I'm driving my automobile on the public highway? and a police car marked as such and containing four officers gets behind me and follows me on the highway, or perhaps catches up with me and drives alongside me along the highway, and I don't like it. Makes me nervous. Have I been seized?
I don't know necessarily, Justice O'Connor, that would be a seizure. I think it strikes me as being less intimidating because you have two vehicles that are already traveling along the highway. You have the person in the vehicle being at least a little more protected than a person who's running on foot. And it seems as though you just have the police cruiser.
It intimidates me to have a police car following me and going alongside me on the highway.
In order for your example to be a seizure under the Fourth Amendment, your feelings of being intimidated must be reasonable, objectively.
And you think that's not objectively reasonable?
I don't think it's as intimidating as a chase by a police cruiser after a pedestrian.
But if I were jogging along the parkway and the police cruiser comes up alongside and keeps up with me, that would be different?
In terms of your use of the phrase keeps up with you, I think that is different than what we have here because we have an individual who is unequivocally running away from a police officer. That's what the lower courts held. And these officers chase after him. There's an admission in the lower court record that this was a chase. The officer was asked by defense counsel, did you pursue the defendant on foot? And in the course of his answer, he corrects her by saying, no, Officer Keller, quote, chased him with the car. He's later asked by the judge, is that what you said? You chased him with the car. His answer, right.
How did he know he was being chased?
How did he know he was being chased?
Yes.
According to the record, Mr. Chesternut had looked in the direction of the police cruiser before beginning to run. He then goes down the side street. And I think the critical fact here is that the police cruiser accelerated to catch up to him, and then it was running parallel with him. So I think it's clear that
it didn't have its siren on, according to you.
Well, Your Honor, I think
How did he know it was chasing him and not me?
Well, Your Honor, he was the only one on the side street that day. He was alone, and the officer said
the car might have just been going down the same way.
Well, the record reflects.
Suppose he was going to get a pizza.
The officer or Mr. Chesternut?
Officer.
Okay. I think
they do it, Tom.
They do, Your Honor. I think the way this chase evolved here.
Could it be he had a guilty conscience?
My client?
Yeah.
Whether or not he believes, whether or not his subjective feelings make him believe that he's nervous or whatever, Your Honor. I think that the critical factor here is the objective circumstances as viewed by the individual. And the objective circumstances here are that Mr. Chesternut ran, and these officers chased after him, overtook him, and then proceeded to run parallel with him. I think that conveys to him that, number one, that this is the man that we're after.
Would you be worried if a cruiser went beside you walking down the street?
If I had run from them.
I didn't add anything
okay.
to it.
If I were walking down the street and a cruiser
on
came.
On your way to church.
No, I don't think I would be.
You wouldn't be worried.
No, I wouldn't.
Aren't there some situations in which you might be mighty glad to see the cruiser come up along?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you might be running at the time, too.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
I think those would present a different fact situation. This court decided.
May I ask a question that this doesn't go to whether there was a seizure, but to the other justification alleged here that if there was, it was a proper one. And I don't know what things are like in Detroit, but I know in my neighborhood, if there's a police car patrolling and this police car sees someone observe the car, do a double take and start running, I would like that police car to follow that person. And what you're saying here is that there have to be instructions issued to police cars that if you see somebody who sees the car, his eyes bug out and he starts running, don't pursue that person. That's essentially the instructions you want our police officers to
have. No, Your Honor. Our position in this case.
Why is this any different?
All right. Our position in this case is that if the officer's true purpose was to see where Mr. Chesternut was going or to see where the individual in your example is going. If that is their true purpose here,
no,
they can do that.
The purpose I wanted to chase him is to ask him, what are you running from us for? Or you know, this is something suspicious, it seems to me. The fellow sees the police car and immediately starts running. Don't you think that sound law enforcement would say, you know, you don't have to frisk the guy necessarily, but at least, you know, cruise along a little and see what's up? What's bad about that?
I think that if all the officers were going to do, in your example, is to cruise along and to see what's up, by seeing where he was going, they could have done that in a number of less intrusive ways. I think they could have, in our case here, they could have simply continued along and watched the man. They could have followed a little bit behind. They could have gone past him and stopped. Remember that they had a police cruiser, and they had four officers here. And I think that gives them a number of options in this case. They could have dropped officers off and circled the block. I think they could have done a number of things to continue surveillance, to follow, to continue to observe Mr. Chesternut. I think what they should not be doing, it would be our position where the line should be drawn, they should not be acting in a manner which intimidates the individual and which leads him to believe that he is going to be detained imminently. And that's our position, that what occurred here was not an attempted seizure. It was the functional equivalent of a seizure, because clearly if these officers had jumped from the cruiser and had searched Mr. Chesternut in order to find these packets, there would be no question. How is it any less offensive to the Fourth Amendment for them to force him to do himself what they are expressly prohibited from doing?
Well, suppose in the hypothetical I gave you, this police car in my neighborhood just cruises alongside the person running and rolls down the window and says, something the matter? I saw you, you know, lighting out. What's going on? Is there anything wrong with that?
That strikes me as somewhat less intimidating than the case that we have here, because you have some sort of reassurance to the individual. But I still would believe that you have the same problem in terms of the individual is exercising his right to go in his way, and these officers are not allowing him to do that.
Well, we don't know what would have happened here, and that's your opponent's point. We really don't know what might have happened if your client hadn't dropped the packets and stopped. Had he continued running, the police officers, for all we know, might have rolled down the window and say, what seems to be the trouble? So are you taking off like that? That would be proper if they had done that, wouldn't it?
I don't believe that it would be. And secondly, Your Honor,
just in my neighborhood it's okay, but not in this neighborhood.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the chase which occurred in this case, the way the aggressive and confrontational action that the police officers took in this case, belied any reasonable inference that their only purpose was to question Mr. Chesternut.
Why? The only thing that might belie that is his knowledge that he had these packets in his pocket, but you've told us we shouldn't take that into account.
Correct, and I think that the
we should assume that he's on the way to church, as Justice Marshall.
Your Honor, I believe that the correct standard is to take the objective circumstances as they appear to a reasonable individual, and I think that the way this occurred, we have a four-on-one situation. We have a police cruiser chasing after a pedestrian. These officers have overtaken him and have slowed down for the purpose of confronting him. These officers, it's clear that Mr. Chesternut would know that he was not armed. If I can just briefly go for a moment and...
Let me ask you a question, Ms. Stanier, about one of your responses to Justice Scalia's question. You say that the police were forcing him to do what he did. Are you saying that the presence of the cruiser and its, quote, pursuit, close quote, of the defendant forced him to dispose of those packets?
Our position is that what occurred here was more than their mere presence on the street. Their approach to the intersection would have been comparable to mere...
Okay, well, whatever the police did, that not only ultimately resulted in a seizure of the defendant, but that just before that it forced him to get rid of those packets?
Right.
Well, why do you say it forced him to? Or
As a factual matter, Your Honor, I think those two questions merge for the individual. The question of whether or not these officers are going to stop him and whether or not they're going to search him, because a detention is really a euphemism for what the individual really thinks is going to happen to him out there. I think that...
Well, it isn't a totally subjective thing at all. None of our cases say that a detention is just a euphemism for what the individual thinks is going to happen to him.
What this court, I believe, has said is that the objective standard of what a reasonable person would believe that is going to happen. My point in terms of the two issues coming together is that if an individual has been chased by four officers in a police car, I think it would be reasonable for him to assume that when they catch him, they're going to see what he has on his person. They have a reason for catching him. And so detention in this situation, I think, in real terms, means that these officers are going to put him up against the car when they do catch him and are going to search him. In terms of the legal analysis here.
And find the dope.
That doesn't, to my mind, make this any less of an abandonment on his part. He's voluntarily parted with this stuff.
All right. In terms of the legal analysis on the abandonment question, our primary position is that because this was an aggressive and confrontational, admitted police chase, it violated the Fourth Amendment, and that unless there is some evidence to indicate that Mr. Chesternut's discarding of the packets was an act of free will under Brown versus Illinois, under Wong Sun versus United States, unless there's some intervening circumstances, some time delay which would suggest that his abandonment was an act of free will, there's still an involuntary abandonment.
Have we ever applied the Brown versus Illinois or Wong Sun standards to abandonments?
I don't know that you have, Your Honor. The Michigan courts have understood that analysis to apply. If I could just briefly, this court decided in United States versus Mendenhall and Florida versus Royer that mere questioning was not constitutionally intrusive because the individual retained two choices. He could either remain and cooperate with the police officer, or he could go on his way. And it's that choice that separates a first-tier questioning encounter from a second-tier Terry-type seizure. And it's that choice which is the sole reason for excusing a police officer from the requirement of reasonable suspicion. In this case, the court has asked for the first time to enforce the right it defined in Mendenhall and to reaffirm that the individual still has two viable choices. Michael Chesternut asserted his right to choose, and he chose to go on his way. And unless this court protects his right to make that choice, the central premise which justified the first-tier questioning encounter in the first place would be destroyed. Petitioner is asking this court to exclude all but a literal detention from the parameters of the Fourth Amendment. And by literal detention, they define either a forcible physical restraint or, in essence, a surrender to a show of authority. That approach would exclude a huge category of police-citizen confrontations from this court's scrutiny. And that approach presumes that this court's scrutiny is not necessary because police officers will not overreach and will not abuse their discretion when they confront individuals on the street. And in fact, petitioner considers that possibility as, and I quote, beyond serious consideration. For 20 years, since Terry versus Ohio, this court has disagreed. Since Terry, this court has recognized that while a police officer needs a flexible response on the street, there must be some limits on his actions. The court recognized then that the reality of what occurs on the street between a police officer and an individual requires some constitutional protection.
What would the normal police officer in your mind do if he drove up beside a man and the man all of a sudden looked and saw the police car and took off?
What could he do under those circumstances?
What do you think he should do?
I think he could continue to investigate, Your Honor.
Should what?
He could continue to investigate in a variety of ways.
Doing what?
He could follow the man. He could watch him. He could watch to see where he's going. I think
That's what they did here.
The officer admitted in this case, and I think it's critical that the officer describes this as a chase. And I think I'm asking the court to credit that characterization because
does it become a chase because of what the officers did or what he did?
Your Honor, I think that
who started the movement?
That's correct. We don't claim that Mr. Chesternut's running in the first instance was preceded by any police illegality. What we claim here is that when these officers chose an escalated response.
When somebody in the street starts running, shouldn't an officer be interested in why he is running?
Yes, and I think that's a legitimate purpose, Your Honor.
What
happened in this case was I think that they may have had a legitimate purpose in terms of to see where he was going, but when they chose to chase him, aggressively confronting him to find out.
What's the difference between seeing where he's going and chasing him?
I think the act of following, the act of seeing where he's going is inherently different than the act of chasing. Following is investigation by observation. It precedes direct action.
So, I really don't care where he's going. I want to know where he's coming from. You really think they're chasing him to see where he's going? They want to know where he lives?
No, I don't believe that was their
chasing him because they think he has done something, And what they want to catch up with him for is to ask him, what are you running from? Isn't that what an intelligent police officer would do? At least that, if not do a Terry stop.
If Your Honor would, if the court were to take that position, the court would then have to say that that flight in and of itself, standing alone, constitutes a reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. I believe that this court has said, at least implicitly on two occasions, that flight simply is not enough. The court suggested in United States versus Sharp, where the court looked at a number of factors in that case which came together to justify the stop of a marijuana truck. Flight was among those factors, and this court said in a footnote, quote, perhaps none of these factors standing alone would give rise to reasonable suspicion. And earlier in Wong Sun versus United States, this court acknowledged that flight, just as a general proposition, is not a reliable indicator of criminal activity. People run from police for a variety of reasons, and virtually every court that has addressed this issue below has found that people run from police for a variety of reasons. They may be past victims of brutality or harassment. They may have been stopped and searched in the past for no reason. They may not want to be arrested as a guilty party falsely. They may not want to be a witness in a case. They may not like police officers. They may feel, for whatever reason, that they simply cannot hold their own.
Flight alone is not enough for what? For probable cause to arrest or for a reasonable, articulable suspicion to make a Terry stop?
The latter, Your Honor. If flight is deemed to constitute reasonable suspicion, then every police chase would be deemed a reasonable seizure because every police chase involves someone running away. Furthermore, a rule allowing a second-tier seizure, a Terry-type seizure, on flight alone, in effect, punishes the individual for exercising his right to go on his way.
Every police chase does not involve somebody running away in the sense that occurred here. That is, someone who only starts running after he sees the policeman. I mean, this isn't the police picking on somebody and say, let's chase that fellow for some reason. This is a fellow, the policeman observed him run only after he saw them. I mean, that's not every chase.
I agree, Your Honor. My point is that if flight, let's call it flight from a police officer, flight from an identifiable police officer, still you have a situation where if that constitutes reasonable suspicion, then every chase is a reasonable seizure in terms of no other suspicion is necessary, no other sort of suspicious gestures, furtive actions, nothing else would be required. And I think that at least would be a retreat from this court's suggestion in those cases that flight is not enough. In terms of the other point, I believe that holding would in effect punish the individual for exercising the right that this court defined in Mendenhall. The individual has two choices. He can remain and cooperate with the police officer, or he can go on his way. And in this case, we had an emphatic expression of the individual's right to go on his way. Reasonableness under the Fourth Amendment also requires a balancing of societal interests. And in this context, the government must show what legitimate law enforcement interest is served by allowing a police officer to chase after an individual in this way and under these circumstances. In the decisions of Martinez-Fuerte, Ines versus Delgado, Florida versus Roy, this court has called upon government, in the first instance, to articulate the specifics of the crime problem that's being addressed. Secondly, it has required that the means used to achieve a crime solution be carefully tailored to the underlying justification. And thirdly, it has required that the investigative methods employed should be the least intrusive means reasonably available to accomplish that end. We submit simply that the chase which occurred in this case failed under this analysis. In terms of the precise objective that was offered here by this officer, the officer explained that he saw Mr. Chestnut run and he wanted to see where he was going. But instead of simply following him, instead of simply observing him, which would have accomplished his objective, these officers chased after him with the police cruiser.
Stanya, are you going to abandon the point, or do you just don't recognize the point that the court decided this on state grounds and not federal ground?
Your Honor, I haven't abandoned it. It's just that it's my reading of the opinions below that, although the courts decided all on state cases, the origin of the doctrine in Michigan came from Terry versus Ohio. So, no, I don't abandon it. Defense counsel below.
Abandon it or not?
I don't abandon it, Your Honor.
You just leave it.
Your Honor,
unsupported.
Well,
it's all right with me. It's not my case.
I understood the lower court's decision as resting totally on an interpretation of the federal Constitution. David Cripps, who pursued the case below, did raise a state constitutional ground, but the decision was decided purely on federal constitutional ground.
I brought it up.
By defining a seizure exclusively as a detention, petitioner is offering the court another litmus paper test that bears no reasonable relation to the issue to be decided or to the realities of the situation. What we should be looking at here is whether this chase was an intimidating and unreasonable show of authority, because if it was, then it offended the basic principles under the Fourth Amendment. I think we ought to consider the possible ramifications in the extreme of counsel's position. In this case, police officers could conceivably rush up or chase up to a stationary crowd, and if an individual seeing police then ran, police officers could then chase after that person and use deadly force, fire shots after that person. And unless the bullet takes effect under petitioner's approach, there would be no Fourth Amendment intrusion. That is precisely where petitioner's approach has taken the Sixth Circuit. And I would hope that this court would agree that that is an outrageous result and one that simply cannot be countenanced under the court's decisions either in United States versus Mendenhall or Tennessee versus Gardner or the Fourth Amendment. Chases on less than a reasonable suspicion are going to affect a percentage of innocent people. The more prevalent this activity becomes, the more tension it generates in the community. The police chase instantly escalates the police-citizen confrontation in terms of a final cost to society. As a matter of public safety, the police chase is dangerous. It poses a hazard to the police, to the individual, and to innocent bystanders as well, as I've indicated in my brief, as I've documented in my brief. In conclusion, we have never suggested here that a police officer has to sit by, has to shrug his shoulders, and do nothing. We have asked only that when he chooses to act, and when he chooses to confront the individual on the street, that he must stand ready to explain why, and that he must choose a measured response. These officers failed to do that here. By chasing Michael Chesternut, they deprived him in a very real way of his right to feel...
And pulled up alongside of him? If they had just stayed 25 yards behind him?
I think it would have been. I think it would have been different, Your Honor. I think that the finale, if you will, of confronting him and of running the cruiser peril...
Well, if they had stayed 25 yards behind him and then he had thrown away the packets and then stopped, just like he did here, thinking that the police were really after him, it would have been a different case.
I believe that it would be. I think at some point they're following him, even from a distance behind, could be intimidated. I just don't think under your example it seems as intimidating as they're confronting him and running parallel with him. I guess that's my answer.
How much of a chase was it? How far did he run before he stopped?
In terms of his running, I think the record reflects that it's somewhere about a half a block. But in terms of their chasing him, they had to go down the first block and halfway up the second block. So in terms of time, I would guess, although the record
but
doesn't...
But he only ran a half a block?
That's correct.
Before he threw away the packets and stopped?
Yes, Your Honor. But it's our position that at that point it had instantly become clear to him.
Not much of a chase.
Yeah. Well, Your Honor, I think that it was enough of a chase to convey to Mr. Chesternut that these officers were going to detain him immediately. And I think that we're not relying on a prolonged confrontation in support of our seizure argument. What we're relying on here are other factors, the fact that this was an aggressive and confrontational situation, a four-on-one, a police cruiser chase of a pedestrian. I think that by doing that, these officers conveyed to him that he was not going to be allowed to leave. These officers failed to explain why they proceeded in this case, and they have failed to choose a measured response. By chasing, they deprived Michael Chesternut in a very real way of his right to feel secure and of his right to go on his way. And for those reasons, we would ask that this court affirm the judgment of the Michigan Court of Appeals.
Thank you, Ms. Stanier. Ms. Solak, you have 11 minutes remaining.
I have no further comments.
Very well. The case is submitted. We'll hear argument next.